This podcast is sponsored by Active Skin Repair, a skin health company helping people heal with natural, non-toxic, medical-grade ingredients. Okay, guys, I am probably one of the most accident-prone people on the planet. You can blame it on many things, bad luck, poor spatial perception, but it all results in the same thing. Bree can injure herself literally anywhere, anytime. Take, for instance, last week, I was plucking my eyebrows, people, and I stabbed myself in the hand. Next thing I know, I am bleeding everywhere going, what the heck just happened? But luckily for me, I had some Active Skin Repair on hand, just one spray, and it felt so much better. By the next day, it was not red, not sore. It was fantastic. I love this stuff. Active Skin Repair can be used to treat a wide range of skin issues, and since it's all natural, non-toxic, it's perfect for people like me with sensitive skin. It works by utilizing hydrochloric acid, which mimics a natural immune response to cleanse, soothe irritation, reduce inflammation, and support the healing. With over 500,000 happy customers, thousands of five-star reviews, and ingredients that are so safe and clean that it can be used from the youngest member of your family all the way up to the oldest, most accident prone like me, you can have one simple solution for your family's skin health needs. So visit www.activeskincarerepair.com to learn more about Active Skin Repair and get 20% off your order by using the code NOGUILT. That's www.activeskinrepair.com. Use the code NOGUILT to get 20% off your order.
Everyone is so worried about them and projecting so much fear on the state of anxiety they're always in and all these issues that we're hearing a lot about. But the girls are telling me the solutions, and there's not enough focus on that. And that's what I'm trying to put a focus on, that hopeful lens.
Welcome to the No Guilt Mom podcast. I'm your host, Joanne Crone, joined here by the lovely Bree Tucker.
Why, hello, hello, everybody. It was tough getting me on today.
Oh my gosh. We talk in this podcast, which, by the way, this episode is a must listen. Even yes. If you don't have a teenage girl in your life currently, it is a healing process for your own inner teenage girl. But we talked a lot about dealing with mistakes and the messy middle. And oh my gosh, did we have to deal with so much, Bree?
My internet has decided to play peekaboo today. Tried everything, and we're like, is it the router? Is it the provider? Is it my laptop? What is it this time? Oh, here's internet. Oh, no, it's not. It's going to go away. It is really hard, people, to record a podcast with a guest who has a crazy packed schedule.
Oh, yeah.
With internet that wants to play peekaboo.
Oh my gosh, it's hard. It's like also like anxiety inducing because, you know, like Chelsea Gooden, her book is on fire right now. She is everywhere and she hopped on and I'm like, Bree's not here yet. And I'm here telling myself, okay, stay cool. So I'm just here like nicely having conversations and Chelsea is lovely. She is so lovely. And I'm like, let me check in with Bree. Because I know how the internet stuff goes. Like, I know it's totally stressful.
And my texts are like, rebooting the computer, rebooting the router. Yes. Call me. You might just have to do this without me. I'm trying everything I can.
Oh my gosh. But we did it. We had such an amazing discussion with Chelsea. So let me introduce you to her. Chelsea Gooden is the author of the USA Today national bestseller, Underestimated, The Power and Wisdom of Teenage Girls, which has been endorsed by Oprah's book club, saying if you have a teenage girl in your life, you need to read this. Amazon's editorial director chose Underestimated as her editor's pick best nonfiction, featuring it on CBS Mornings. And when Chelsea was recently on Today with Hoda and Jenna, they exclaimed, "We couldn't stop talking about your book." And that was the same kind of reaction that Bree and I had about the book as well. So Chelsea has been a mentor and empowerment coach to teenage girls for 16 years. She speaks regularly to audiences about gender justice, conducts workshops, and serves as the mentorship director of Democracy, which supports and guides girls from underserved communities into leadership positions. She's been featured in Time, Oprah Daily, NBC News, and Chelsea's passion is to explore humanity's potential for authenticity, liberation, and empowerment. And we hope you enjoy our conversation with Chelsea.
You want mom life to be easier. That's our goal too. Our mission is to raise more self-sufficient and independent kids, and we're going to have fun doing it. We're going to help you delegate and step back, Each episode, we'll tackle strategies for positive discipline, making our kids more responsible, and making our lives better in the process. Welcome to the No Guilt Mom Podcast.
Chelsea, we're so excited to have you here at the podcast. I have honestly been talking your book up so much to our Balance VIP community and how amazing it is and how it's like a healing process for me as a mom, even though it's about teenage girls. So we're just so excited to have you here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. So happy to be here.
I think it's so interesting your perspective on this too, because a lot of parenting books, they're written by like PhDs and researchers and people who really go into it. And you have a very like almost on the street, in the trenches sort of view of this all. Tell us what your experience is working with these teenage girls.
Right. Well, it is a different view because I have been invited into this super rare space of trust with these girls on this one-on-one time that isn't like a therapist or a teacher. It's a totally different dynamic. And they've trusted me to be their microphone or their portal for what they want to say to the world. And it's very much like I am their advocate. You know, I'm not trying to be a parenting expert, trying to come in to tell parents, like as a researcher, I'm a little bit more like, the girls have told me all this. Like, let me tell you all their secrets and how, what they need, what they want, what, and how to empower them so that they can live their best, healthiest life, right? Like, everyone is so worried about them and projecting so much fear on the state of anxiety they're always in and all these issues that we're hearing a lot about. But the girls are telling me the solutions, and there's not enough focus on that. And that's what I'm trying to put a focus on, that hopeful lens.
It is like a secret club that you got invited to. And I just want to know where that invitation lies. As a mom of a teen girl, it is an elusive invite.
Are you ready? Sure. I'm ready. I'm going to give you the secret.
Yes.
I'm going to give you the secret. Teenage girls feel judged. Mm-hmm. They feel judged.
I hear that.
By everyone.
I hear that. And I think as a parent, like, we tend to be like, oh, nobody's judging you. It's fine. And that just devalues them, right? Like, it just sucks.
Yeah, no.
The worth.
Yeah. And they can feel it. Like, you truly have to deactivate your own triggers, your own secret agenda, and be approach them truly with a genuine curiosity, seeking to understand their point of view, giving tons of space for their voice, just listening, not jumping in with your own ideas, your fixes, your positivity.
Yeah.
And just reflecting back what they said to you. And that's the space where they feel seen and heard and understood and not judged. And when that happens, that's when all the beautiful things happen. And they start sharing because they feel emotionally safe, psychologically safe. Because really, we project a ton of shame onto girls too. And not intentionally. You know, by the way, I know parents are super well-intentioned. It's just that we have our own baggage, our own wounds from our teenage years. And that's what it's connected to, our own insecurities. And we project onto a teenage girl, often our own story. Yeah. And she's often like, that's not my story.
Oh my God, we hear that all the time, don't we, Joanne?
Oh yeah, yeah.
We don't know what it's like to be a teen.
We don't know what it's like. But so, like, the thing I loved in your book, Chelsea, is, like, first of all, you said that we have to disarm our own triggers. And while I was reading it, it makes me realize that the stuff that we put up with as adult women, we are then projecting also onto our teenage girls. Like, this statement in particular, I was like, oh my gosh. You say adults, on the other hand, find themselves sharing something vulnerable and then patiently listening to other people's advice, judgment, positive spin, minimization, and moral lessons, all the while flashing a fake smile and shoving their annoyed resentments deep into their soul, only to be unearthed during the explosion of a midlife crisis. I cannot tell you how much I was like, yes!
And what if instead of us all unpacking that baggage in therapy in our 30s and 40s and so on, that we actually moved upstream and helped not create these wounds in the first place? I think we could change the trajectory for all women.
Yeah, yes, because it's so true. Like, what we expect our teenage girls, and Bree and I, you know, we both have teenage daughters, and I catch myself doing this too. I catch myself sharing my opinion, and then she gets mad. And then I think, well, like, I have to, like, put my fake smile on, and I have to play nice. And then I get mad at her for that. But then I feel bad that I'm like, it's such a cycle.
It is such a cycle. It's a cycle of shame. Yeah. And it's hard.
And people-pleasing yeah. and perfectionism and all these ideas that we need to be perfect and likable and put on a show, a performance, that everything's okay and I'm okay. And we're not creating space for women, you know, not just girls, to have displeasing feelings that are normal human emotions, things like anger and yes. frustration and disappointment. And, you know, when girls don't have space for that, they think of it as bad when they have those emotions. They are a bad person. They absorb it into their character. And then that's why they shove it down and squash it too. When actually, no, it's okay. It's sometimes completely reasonable to be upset and angry about things sometimes, yeah. you know? And we just need someone to be like, yeah, that sucks. Yeah, I get it.
It does suck. I want to talk to you a little bit about choice and when we give kids choice, because in the parenting world, choice is such a loaded statement, because the choices that most parenting experts say to give kids, they're not really choices at all. They're like, you do this one or you do this one, mm-hmm. where there might be like another option, like way over here in left field that we're not even considering.
Exactly.
Like, yeah. Tell me where choice really fits in to our relationship with teenage girls.
And teenage girls specifically are just starving for agency, mm-hmm. having a say in things, having their voice considered and being a part of the conversation. Because the book is The Wisdom, right? And Power of Teenage Girls. So I always say, phrase everything as a question, where you really, honestly, one of my main go-tos is just, what do you think about that? What do you, you know, what are your thoughts? And then I'll expand. How would you handle this? What do you think the solution is here? And, I might have an idea in my head, but honestly, their solutions, I'm always like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. That's a really good idea. And when she does it, when she gets the agency and choice to try her own idea, then when it goes well, she's super empowered and she starts feeling that self-trust of like, oh, I make smart choices. I'm capable of this. My parent trusts me to make smart choices. Mm-hmm. And let's say she doesn't make maybe the best choice you thought she should make, right? And it's painful to watch. That being said, when it is her choice, it's also her mistake to learn from. Mm-hmm. And she will learn it more sincerely rather than if we just project everything onto her, trying to buffer bad choices. She's not going to learn anything. And they need that dynamic space to make mistakes where it's safe. And again, with girls in particular, there's not a lot of room for them to make mistakes. They absorb it into their identity as if they're a failure. Whereas I see a difference when I'm working with boys. Boys are like, whatever, I made a mistake. Like, they don't see it as this huge issue the way that the girls do. And I think, again, it's back to that perfection and likability, that a mistake is going to tell the world that they're not going to succeed, or, you know, they have all this messaging that's going on inside their head.
Yeah.
But if we are just like, give them that space to make choices, good, bad, whatever it might be, but a safe environment to do it, and then affirm them. I'm always like, that was a smart idea. Oh my gosh, look how well that went for you. And that affirmation is so important for them to truly absorb. Oh, okay, I made a good choice. I can trust myself to do this.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting, like watching my daughter make choices, because I would love for her to be more confident in her choices. And she gets into this place where she can't make a choice. She has too many options, and she does internalize that whole, I'm a failure. If I make the wrong choice, it'll be horrible, everything like that. So like watching her go through that is a hard thing. So if you have a kid like that who is just so almost incapacitated by choices, what's something you could do to kind of guide them along and help them through it?
Well, I like to make sure they know that it's not so black and white, right? Like, I talk about the gray zone in the book. And so often we're thinking in binaries, either I'm going to make the best choice or I'm going to make the wrong choice. And I love to explore that middle gray zone space with them and name it for them. Okay, well, you know, you have all these choices. And I of course, I'm always reinforcing that there is no true right and no true wrong. And that these, you know, we're always trying to go 0 to 10. And I talk in language with them about step 3, 4, 5, those middle zone steps, and how that's usually where we're existing. And it's a great place to exist. And I bring a lot of positivity to that space rather than just purely achievement focus. So often mm-hmm. we're just trying to always get to 10 and always do the best. And instead, you know, it's about giving a lot of good positive energy to that middle ground.
That's a good thing. Bree and I actually were just discussing that teenagers are very black and white if we don't pay any attention to that middle ground. Like, it's either horrible or it's good. And it's crazy to help them get out of it. There's so much good stuff in your book, and I cannot wait to dig into more, specifically how we don't have as much control over our kids' actions as we think and their feelings. And let's get into that right after this. You have probably heard me talk about my dog, Addie, before, and when we first got her, we didn't know that she was a counter surfer. Now, counter surfing animals are the ones who jump on counters, especially kitchen counters, when you're not looking and take stuff off of them. Well, in this instance, Addie had jumped onto the kitchen counter and eaten an entire bottle of my other dog's pain medication. You can imagine the freak out that ensued from me. So imagine this. You're at the vet's office again. Knowing that vet care costs continue to rise, you're anxiously waiting to hear how expensive the bill will be. But if you had pet insurance, your pet could be covered for accidents or illnesses. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance.
The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care that they may need. They allow you to customize the plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are.
The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account.
To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/no guilt. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/no guilt. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/no guilt.
This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. Hey guys, Bree here. And let me tell you, April is a killer time of the year for me because it is crazy allergy season. I swear, everything that is in bloom looks fantastic and beautiful, but it makes it so I can't breathe. I am literally coughing, sneezing, rubbing my nose. I look like Rudolph half of the spring. It's terrible. But luckily for those of us who live with symptoms of allergies like I do, we live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can finally breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine is the best decongestant available. It relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy, watery eyes, itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I absolutely love it. It is the only allergy medicine that works for me. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just one quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear.
So we were talking before about giving teens choice and living more in that middle ground and not so much black and white. You have a great suggestion too about how to model that middle ground. What should we do there?
Yeah. And we are modeling all the time. Don't underestimate how much that matters. And that I like to say out loud, oh, I'm just going to hold some space for imperfection right now. And I'm just going to do this imperfectly. And that's okay. You know, just kind of bring levity to it also, where again, it's not a part of your character. You're not beating yourself up in front of them. We're like, oh, I could have done that better. You know, they see all of that. Mm-hmm.
They do. They see all of it. And I notice it too when they emulate it. They like, you see them go through something and you're like, oh, those words coming out of my kid's mouth. I said that. That's my mirror.
Yeah. And also you see, not only do you see your kids emulating you, but you also find yourself sometimes, oh crap, I'm turning into my mother. That's exactly what I remember her saying to me when I was 15.
Well, to honor the title of your podcast, No Guilt Moms, like it's not something to then beat yourself up about more, right? And feel guilty about. It's just like our humanity that we need to just have a lot more empathy and care around that. Hey, this is, we're going to not do things perfectly because that perfection doesn't exist.
No, it doesn't exist. And we can't protect our kids from choices they make either. That's something that I hear go around a lot in the parenting world, especially in regards to screens and screen time. There's all these like rules and boundaries you're supposed to put against your kids to kind of protect them from bad choices. But it goes to the extreme. And I love how in your book, it talks about you need to have this release of perceived control. Can you talk about this perceived control?
Yeah, because the truth is the more you try to control a teenage girl specifically, the more she is going to put all the walls up, shut you out, have the exact opposite reaction to what you want. So the truth is meeting her where she's at, loving her with exactly who she is and not trying to, so often not even just trying to control or protect, I see also teach her what's best. And that teaching also feels like criticism to her, where she's, well, I'm just not good enough. Guess I can't do anything right. It's back to that judgment. And, in terms of even social media choices or clothing choices or all these, hard terrains to navigate, and she wants to be a part of the conversation, like I had said. And so it's usually like, well, what would be a healthy dynamic for you? How would you like to handle this? I bring it back to those questions, whether it is social media or understanding why she wants to wear that outfit. Like, oh, cool. How does it make you feel? Like, I just want to understand better, so that she feels, when she feels understood and that she's heard, that is when a true communication exchange happens rather than a control dynamic, which I find shuts the conversation down.
And like something I realized too, Chelsea, is that this has brought up so much for me, by the way. So I have a lot to unpack. But I feel lonely when people try to teach me or when they put like minimizing stuff to my feelings or say, you should do that. I just feel like lonely. And I was thinking this and I'm like, maybe my daughter feels lonely as well. And so we were sitting in the car the other day and she was describing how she didn't know if she wanted to run for student council president for next year. And normally I'd be like, oh, just give it a try. Or like, oh, it's okay to drop it if you want to. But because of your book, I sat there with her. I sat in her hole. It's like I like Maggie with perspectives. She's on social media. Yeah. She says, go into somebody's hole and sit with them there. I sat in her hole with her and I was just like, tell me what you're thinking. What are your different viewpoints? And it made all the difference. She just was like, you could see her whole stature just kind of raise up as she told me the differing things. And it's really what you're saying about staying that middle ground with them, the messy middle.
Oh, I love that. And you're so right, because it helps her find the solution for herself, what actually is right for her. Because back to control, we actually don't know what's right for everybody else in the world. They are experiencing a whole different world inside their head and inside their emotions, and we don't always know what's best. But when we can sit with them and be like, well, what do you think? How would you let, and so on, how you just did with her about that, it lands all of a sudden. She's like, wait, no, okay, I guess I was scared about this, but you know what? I can get over that. And you can see them processing and having that space to process to figure out what's right for them.
Totally. And you touched a little bit about teenage girls and outfits. And I wanted to shift the conversation a little bit to dress code and telling teens what to wear. Something that I found really interesting, what you said, is that today's teenage girls, they see themselves as being able to do both. They can wear clothes that make them feel good. They can put themselves out there. They can be concerned about beauty. And they can be really smart, really intelligent. Whereas like the generation I was raised in, which I proudly geriatric millennial, and Bree's Gen X, that's what they call us, yes. Geriatric millennials, yeah.
Ouch!
Isn't that funny?
Ouch! God, that's painful.
But our wave of like feminism was like, we don't care about our looks. We don't care about what we're wearing.
We need to wear the baggy shirt, hide it. Just, I'm smart. Yeah.
So what have you seen here with like teens like really claiming?
Yeah. And I do bring it up in the book that this wave of feminism is that women can be all things. we can be pretty and smart, you know, we can do, and it seems obvious, but by saying it out loud, you realize how much we do hold ourselves back in these yeah. environments and we worry about it. And Gen Z doesn't feel that way. Gen Z is, wait, what? We really don't actually get all the limitations we had been putting on ourselves. And what happens, though, in terms of clothes is usually whenever we do try to control or comment on their clothes is they just only take it as shame. That's it. They are not like, oh, that's a smart idea. I guess you're right. They're just like, oh, thanks for shaming my body and my – because a girl's relationship to her clothes is actually a huge exploration of identity. And yeah. this is the time of their life where they are trying to explore their identity. And clothes is literally one of the best routes for them to do that. So just because she's wearing this one day doesn't mean she's going to wear it forever. Like, she actually might just be exploring and be like, wait, what does that bring out of me? Do I like that? You know, and having some safety around that would be great. Like safety, emotional safety.
It's so, like, interesting to bring this up. I'm going to go a slight offshoot just for a second from where I think Joanne was going with this. But, like, my daughter, sometimes she is, like, all about, like, short shorts and crop tops. And I'll admit, you know, it makes prudish mom a little bit, like, makes me feel prudish, even though I don't think I am. And I see her dad get very, very upset about it, because in their household, that's just definitely not okay. But I find if I don't say a stinking word, that by the next day, we're to, like, the baggy sweats slipper shoes. And I'm all like, okay, so it isn't about her. Because I feel like sometimes, again, we're bringing in our old thing of, they're trying to be older than they are. They're trying to, like, and again, we're bringing, like you just said, we're bringing in our own thoughts, our own baggage into that conversation. And they are a million light years away from that. I have, like, asked, like, you know, well, why do you like this? Why do you like that? And hearing her and knowing that it's all about being able to have that control and being able to express herself is huge. So backing off of the whole, like, but I can see your bra straps.
Yeah.
Is that the end of the world?
The bra strap situation. I mean, girls get sent home from dress codes on bra straps. And I'm at the stage where I'm like, are we that scared of a bra strap? Because what it tells us a girl is that her body is dangerous, that she's responsible for boys and what they're thinking, and all the blame is on her. And that, you know, and by the way, boys will wear their pants lower than their boxers, showing their boxers. They do not get sent home for dress codes ever.
Exactly.
Right. And I'm just a little over all the commentary on the girls have to handle on this front. And I mean, this is what they tell me. Are you kidding? All they want me to tell the world is about dress codes and slut shaming. Like, they love when I talk about this on
the
podcast.
Because it's happening every day. And like the biggest one that I get so mad at is that the way a girl dresses, she invites attention on herself. And I really want to get into that right after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Amy.
And together we host the podcast, What Fresh Hell? Laughing in the Face of Motherhood.
Margaret, I would say you're sort of a where are my keys kind of mom.
Correct. Sometimes a where are my kids kind of mom. Well, you're, Amy, more of a we were supposed to leave 35 seconds ago, mom.
I mean, touche. In each episode of What Fresh Hell, we come at a topic from our usually completely opposite perspectives. I bring the research.
And I bring kind of the gimlet eye. Like, is that research really going to work, people?
And almost 10 million downloads later, we're still laughing.
We also talk to experts in the parenting field, plus parents with stories we can all learn from.
We make each other laugh, we challenge each other's assumptions, and we have what we think is the best parenting community on the internet.
Check out What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Let's dig into this comment, usually by the older generation, where a girl is like dressing a certain way and she's just going to bring all this unwanted attention. And Chelsea, go!
Well, where the attention should be placed is teaching our boys what healthy, respectful sexuality would be, and not to objectify and sexualize the women in their girls in their life. Like, we can teach boys to be better. I don't understand why the girls have to handle all of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm on the board of a nonprofit called A Call to Men, which is all about teaching that respectful, healthy masculinity to men and boys. And we're underestimating the boys and their ability to do this as well. And, you know, if we're talking about gender-based violence, it's actually a male issue. And where's that coming from? Rather than we've always called it violence against women, as if it was their problem to solve. And if women could have ended gender-based violence by now, we would have done it. Right.
Totally.
No, like we need the participation of men in understanding where this is coming from. So this whole idea that the girl has to literally adjust her clothing to make sure she's not asking for it is such a problem. And again, all it does is create shame for the girl.
Yeah. I'm interested. What do you do? Because I feel like schools hide behind language of it's not professional dress. And that's how they kind of justify sending a girl home for showing a bra strap or having a skirt that's not long enough for their guidelines. How do you recommend going up against that?
Right. I mean, oh, gosh, as much as I want to, you know, change all the systems that are broken in the world, which I do. I have had luck of, I always love when a girl does advocacy within her own school, whether it's the literature they're reading or the dress code or sex education curriculum. I've had a lot of girls do really cool going to the administration and speaking up. And whether she's successful or not, the actual act of her doing it and making her voice heard is so empowering. Right. So I always encourage her to do it rather than necessarily a parent kind of storming in. That being said, there can be some things that are an issue that I think it's totally valid for a parent to be like, hey, we do not support this. Right. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand how bad sex education curriculum is these days, too.
Oh, God.
18 states require it that be medically accurate. Only 11 states require that consent be taught. So that explains a lot, again, how we're not helping boys.
Yeah, you don't want to know what Arizona's criteria is.
Oh my! I was a fifth grade teacher, and I could tell you, so we split the class into boys and girls. We weren't allowed to talk about sex at all. I had to teach the fifth grade boys. I'm not allowed to put anything additional. Like, I have to read verbatim from a binder. Now, this was 10 years ago, but I mean, that is it. That is all they get. And all they got in fifth grade was like, this is your penis. Like, that's it.
And the girls learn about their period and then that's it. And they don't even know how to name the correct anatomy. It's the reason I've gotten more passionate about it again is because the girls keep telling me that they want this. So, you know, I did 3 workshops of girls last week and I presented like 32 different issues for them of what they wanted to dive into. And literally every single workshop, every girl in it was like, sex education, please, sex education. Like and it's not because they're like, everyone's so worried if you teach them about sex, they're going to go off and just have sex. That's not the case.
I know,
right? These girls are
not
super responsible. Ridiculous. They're super smart. They actually just want to make healthy choices and they need information.
They do. And it's so funny that like reasoning, because it's like you don't do stuff based on like information. You do stuff based on lack of information because you're experimenting with it and figuring out like, okay, well, let's try this one or let's try this one. It's so
Actually, a couple girls on those workshops were like, my friend got pregnant and she's dealing with a teen pregnancy right now. And she was so upset for her friend. And she was like, she didn't know about birth control. I was like, oh my gosh, just the foundations and basics.
Yeah, the stories from my high school, ridiculous. And I had several friends who ended up having like pregnancies in high school from like the craziest, again, not having knowledge. But one of them, after she went to Planned Parenthood and got on the pill, her mom threw them out the window and said, you're never going to need this anymore because you're not having sex again. And I'm like, oh yeah, because that works.
That works so well.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't work. I can tell you firsthand, it didn't help. Nope. Not one out of the 6 of us that were best friends were like, oh, yes, that's the route we're going to go. No.
It's back to that control and how it actually creates the opposite effect where they're actually just going to rebel and not like you and make choices that are not informed well because they don't have the information.
Because they're doing it just to buck the system, right? Because I just want to be seen. I just want to be heard. And if this is how I had to be seen and heard.
Well, and then this is where we are underestimating them too. Like the girls do make really responsible choices. I mean, they've talked to me a lot. I mean, even the quotes in that sexuality chapter I have in the book, these girls are giving really wise quotes about these issues. And then that's, again, why I try to amplify their voices in this book because we're underestimating how smart they are.
Oh, yeah. I think like all of our children are completely underestimated how smart they are. And we as adults don't give them enough. We don't give them enough credit. We think that we can make all their decisions because we're the adults, and it just doesn't work out that way. And Chelsea, I've loved your entire book. I think everybody should go out and get it. What right now, besides doing this book, well, maybe it's in relation to the book, what exciting is going on for you right now? What are you looking forward to?
Well, yeah, I'm still in the heart of the press tour and, you know, on all the news shows and stuff, which I've loved. And honestly, the best thing that's been happening is that I've been getting DMs and feedback from women across the country reading this book. And it's just filled my heart up with, like, all I wanted to do is make a difference. So please follow me on Instagram. Let me know that you're reading it. Also, by the way, this is so perfect for a book club, for a mom book club.
Yeah.
The way that the chapters are structured, where it's like people-pleasing, self-doubt, shame, power, the media, beauty, you know, all issues that we're all grappling with and we all have something to say about whether you've read the chapter or not. And it creates community among moms. Also, moms reading it with their teenage daughter has been really cool, creating conversations that way. So I'm really excited about that ripple effect.
Ooh, I should recommend it to my daughter.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I have to say one of my favorites also is like how for like the ADHD brain, at the end of every chapter, you have core insights. It's like, hey, remember how like you enjoyed this? Here's the main things I want you to take away from the chapter. And it has a quote from a teenage girl that really like helps bring it together. So I already told you this book is being sent to somebody special in my life. Some insights. Insights on a teenage
anonymous,
girl.
The anonymous little package on his doorstep. No. Chelsea, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, and both of you are so wonderful. Thank you for amplifying these issues and having people here. It's so important. It's a really good thing you're doing.
Thank you for the work you're doing.
Absolutely. Yes. And go and get Chelsea's book, Underestimated, The Wisdom and Power of Teenage Girls. Even if you don't have a teenage girl right now in your life, you might in the future, and it's a healing process for you as an adult woman as well.
Yeah, the healing your own inner teenage girl is really the heart of the book.
Exactly. So thank you so much, Chelsea. So Chelsea isn't kidding when she says these are really great topics to bring up with your teenage girls, because I was bringing up the whole sexuality chapter with my daughter and about how, you know, it's called this violence against women instead of violence perpetrated by men. And I asked her opinion on this, and she's like, yeah. And my son was sitting right next to us, and I'm like, yeah, well, not all men are bad. And she told me in her wisdom of her teenage years, yeah, not all men are bad, but it is all. No, what did she say? I can't remember it. Do you remember?
You did tell me about this. I'm remembering the story now. Not all men are bad, but all.
No, it's not all men, but all of it is men.
Oh.
Like, that's it. Because you see these crimes and the violence perpetrated by men. It is all, I mean, rapes, they're all men. So it's interesting seeing that.
I think the hard part is like what we talked about in the podcast, which is how it's all placed on the girl. There is, and Chelsea talks about that in her book, like in general, like so much pressure is put on our teenage girls. Just from my looking from outside the fishbowl in, I feel like our teenage girls are being told that, you know, A, like you just said, it's their job to make sure that they don't put themselves in a position where a boy did something like that, because it was all her fault because she was in that position, or she dressed a certain way, or she acted a certain way. So she was inviting that violence upon her, which is bullshit.
Yeah.
Bullshit right there. But then also like the pressure that they have to, like girls being told that we did so much for you to move forward with feminism, you need to keep that march going forward. And so they feel like they have all of this pressure that they have to carry on for everybody. They have to make the right choices, but they can't make them too loudly. And she talked about the whole, like, how girls these days can dress nicely and care about their looks, and how we were told kind of like the message when we were younger that, well, if you care about your looks, then you're being vain. And they're like,
you're shallow.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, like, I definitely struggled with that as a teen. So much so, trying to figure out where I fit in. And I didn't really fit into any one area. And like where I grew up, they were very big cliques. And it was like, I would try to dress Like, for instance, I was trying to be more of like grungy, but I got refused by the grungy people because I was in band. But then when I would go into band, I was refused by those people because I hung out with the skateboarders. And then like it just the skaters, yeah. not skateboarders. I felt like I never really fit anywhere. And if I did do my makeup and my hair, then I would get shunned by certain people. And if I didn't do it well enough, I'd get shunned by other people. And it was like I never could.
You can never find your fit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I look at that and I'm like, I think like it's everybody. Everybody would say that they could never find their fit. And it's because putting themselves in like such narrow types that like it's so interesting because when I saw my daughter, like she likes to look at makeup tutorials, like I had a genuine fear and I'm like, oh my gosh, she's concentrating on the wrong thing.
Because that's what we were told.
Yes. And I've overcome that. And I've realized that is my thinking and my triggers. And honestly, I've learned a lot of great makeup and skincare stuff from my daughter, and like I look better today because of her influence. But it's so funny how those things just pop up and you don't even realize how big of an impact they're making on you and your decisions.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, again, like coming back, so I can't articulate enough how much I love this book, but what I do love so much about it is that it's most of the information is coming from the kids. It's coming from the teenage girls. And it's when we stop trying to fix it, when we stop trying to mold them into who we think they should be, and we actually ask them about their ideas and their situations and their solutions and what they're feeling and what's going on, and we don't judge them or tell them that they are incorrect. And it's funny, I got to throw in that too, like, because I feel like sometimes as parents, especially as well-meaning parents, we'll be like, oh, like we said in the episode, they really feel like everybody is judging them. And I think part of that is somewhat true. The society we're in right now, like their social media, there's a lot more judgment that is fast and furious going on than what we had growing up with the whole F around and find out what happens in the 90s and 80s where we could hide things. We'll hear what's going on and they'll say like, oh, so-and-so must be thinking I'm an idiot now. And we're like, oh, no. No, because we know that they probably aren't. But right there, that's your feelings are not valid. What you're feeling isn't true. And what you just said to me isn't important enough for me to stop and listen.
Yeah.
And that's not what we mean. That's true. What we're trying to do is help make it better.
Yeah. And that doesn't work.
No. So it's like, been a hard lesson. You and I struggle with this a lot because we both have two kids. I have two teens right now. 17-year-old son just turned 17 and a 15-year-old daughter. And I have had to learn so much in terms of for both of them of just trying to stop fixing and trying to start listening and meeting them where they are.
Yeah. It's a hard lesson for sure. I get accused all the time by my daughter that not everything has to be a lesson, Mom. And I'm like, oh, well, there's the teaching element. Here we go. And it's hard to take. I want to cry every time she says it. And last night, even, we got into a thing and she told me off that I made her feel bad. And I was just like, okay, I'm just not going to share my opinion. And that was rather passive aggressive of me. But then I just shut up. And shutting up was the best thing I did in that circumstance. Not crying, not making it a big deal, just shutting up. And sometimes that's the only thing we can do when we're so like when our teens tell us something and we feel like we have been not humbled, but we feel like we've been attacked and we feel the need to defend ourselves. I think sometimes shutting up is the best solution, which is hard.
My go-to on that one, I think, is I just say I'm processing because I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
I'm like, and because sometimes they lash at you and then they're like, why? Why are you being quiet now? You're mad at me now, aren't you? And you're like, I'm processing.
Yeah.
Give me some time. I'm processing.
That's a good one. I'm going to try that.
Because I'm trying to figure out if I'm going to go scream, cry, or eat a pint of ice cream. I'm not sure which right now, but
I'm not sure
which one of them's going to happen. I just got to figure out which one's coming first. So go get Chelsea's book. Oh, this is phenomenal.
Exactly. Get Chelsea's book. And remember, the best mom's a happy mom. Take care of you. And we'll talk to you later.
Thanks for stopping by.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.